Going to Ford's Theater to watch the play is like going to Hooters for the food.
Sarah Vowell, reading from her book Assassination Vacation.
Deciding to stay for Act Two, I spend intermission in the Lincoln Museum administered by the National Park Service in the theater's basement. There are the forlorn blood spots on the pillow thought to have cradled the dying Lincoln's head, the Lincoln mannequin wearing the clothes he was shot in, the key to the cell of conspirator Mary Surratt. Intermission over, I found myself looking forward to the rest of the play, happily bounding back up to my seat. But I paused on the balcony stairs for a second, thinking about how these were the very stairs that Booth climbed to shoot at Lincoln, and how sick is this? Then I remembered, oh no, they're not. The interior of the Ford's Theater in which Lincoln was shot collapsed in 1893, but then, in 1968, the National Park Service dedicated this restoration, duplicating the setting of one of the most repugnant moments in American history just so morbid looky-loos like me could sign up for April 14th, 1865, as if it were some kind of assassination fantasy camp. So how sick is that?
Sarah Vowell is obsessed with presidential assassinations, especially the death of our greatest president, Abraham Lincoln. So she went on a long road trip following in the footsteps of Lincoln and tracking the getaway of his assassin, John Wilkes Booth. Steve Paulson discovered that there's still plenty of mystery and drama surrounding Lincoln's death.
Certainly the story of Lincoln's assassination is very dramatic. I mean, for instance, what happened after John Wilkes Booth pulled the trigger and his escape. And there are still some unanswered questions. I mean, we know that when he jumped off the balcony, he broke his ankle and he made his getaway.
Actually, some people think he broke his ankle on the getaway.
But oh, okay.
I don't, but a lot of, there are a lot of questions.
Well, and one of the questions is, for instance, he goes to the home of this doctor.
What was his name? Dr. Mudd.
Dr. Mudd, Samuel Mudd.
Yeah.
And there's this enduring question about whether Mudd was in on it, in on the conspiracy, or whether he was just an innocent doctor who Booth happened to stop by and get help from.
Yeah. That controversy, I think, would have just died if not for Mudd's grandson, who was one of the great PR men of the 20th century. The guy lived to be like 102 years old, and he was the one always like pestering state legislatures to pardon his grandfather, and he convinced Carter and Reagan to write letters saying they thought that Mudd was innocent. And I used to be on the fence until, I mean, one thing you can learn just by going places, Booth is, he just shot the president. It's the middle of the night. He's on horseback. He has a broken leg, and he's just stopped for whiskey and presumably had some of it. So he's kind of drunk, and it's the middle of the night, and it's rural Maryland. And he just happens upon this farmhouse with, like, the only doctor for miles around. And he needs a doctor more than anything. But then when I went there with my friend, we got so lost. And we had, you know, we had an atlas. We had printouts from MapQuest. We had a travel article from the Washington Post. Pre-printed Booth's escape route maps. And we still got lost finding that mud house. And I mean, just that alone wasn't, like, damning to me, because there's no way you could find that place unless you were looking for it. I mean, and then some historian was digging through some, maybe it was the National Archives in the 70s, and actually found a lost affidavit from one of the other conspirators saying that Booth had sent supplies ahead to Mudd, and there's pretty compelling evidence that both Booth and Mudd were members of the Confederate Secret Service. So, personally, I think he's guilty as hell.
What's curious now is that there is the Samuel Mudd House that's been preserved. I mean, it's a tourist attraction.
Totally.
And don't some people also go to the federal prison where Dr. Mudd was held after the assassination?
Yeah.
Because he was arrested and incarcerated for a while.
Yeah, that would be Dry Tortugas National Park, and that prison was a fort on a desert island 70 miles off the coast of Key West, and it's a national park. And you can go there and you can see Mudd's cell and you can learn about Mudd, but you can also go snorkeling or have a picnic or go bird watching. It's a very well-rounded
tourist
Florida
destination.
Keys experience, yes.
Well, there are some other characters, too, whose lives seem to be permanently touched by the Lincoln assassination.
Mm-hmm.
One was Henry Rathbone, the guy who happened to be sitting in the box at the Ford Theater when Lincoln was shot and who was, I guess, stabbed by Booth.
Right.
And his life totally went off
the
rails.
Yeah, it totally, yeah, it did. He was probably the first person to realize what had happened. Because Booth shot his gun during a big laugh line in the play, it took people a while to figure out what happened, but Rathbone was the first to grasp the situation and tried to grasp Booth, and Booth sliced at Rathbone's arm and then, you know, got his spur caught on the flag as he jumped down to the stage. But Rathbone, a lot of people blamed Rathbone for not stopping Booth.
He was supposed to throw himself on top of Lincoln,
guess,
to like a Secret Service agent or something.
So Rathbone was just horribly shamed, and he just had this complete and total mental decline over the years. And then eventually he married the woman in the box with him, who was his fiance and stepsister. And they got married, and eventually he asked her if they could move to Germany, and she thought a change of scenery would do him good, but that's where he went completely off the deep end, and he shot and killed her, his wife, and was about to kill his children. But a nanny stopped him from killing the children, and then one of those children grew up to be a congressman from Illinois, and that congressman is the one who sponsored the bill to pay for those items in the Lincoln Museum at Ford's Theater. So things kind of come back around.
Hmm. Well, there is this sense, too, that if you're really into Lincoln, you can make a pilgrimage, in a sense, to all these different sites. I mean, you can sort of look at it as, oh, you know, these are kind of interesting historical curiosities.
Yeah.
But you can take it much more seriously. And there are all kinds of different places you can go to visit virtually anything to do with the Lincoln assassination.
Yeah, you can. I did, certainly.
What jumped out at you the most, would you say, of like all the places you went that had some connection to Lincoln?
Well, there's the National Museum of Health and Medicine outside of Washington, D.C. at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center, where they have this Lincoln skull fragments in a little petri dish. They're just little tiny white pieces of bone that the bullet dislodged from his skull at impact.
So they kept these. They kept parts of Lincoln's skull and preserved them forever.
Yeah, they did. Not unlike medieval reliquaries. I mean, it's a petri dish, so it's not as fancy as those little, like, Baroque ornamental things that you can see in certain churches in Europe for, you know, relics of saints, which relic is a nice word for body part, basically.
Well, there's obviously a rather ghoulish quality to the obsession with Lincoln's death, which I understand. I mean, I sort of get into the ghoulish, you know, it's, I know there are displays, for instance, of what was in Lincoln's pocket when he died, what was in John Wilkes Booth pocket. And
there are displays of that too. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sort of curious about that. Maybe it's because with something so concrete, you're kind of touching that moment. Perhaps.
Yeah. And the pocket, it's so close. It's like it's in the guy's pants, you know, it it's not as close as a skull fragment, but it's still pretty close. And, you know, I read a lot of kind of trashy novels involving coroners and forensic anthropologists and stuff, and there are always those moments when there's a victim and then they go through the victim's pockets, and because it's your last pocketful, everything takes on such significance and says something about who you are, you know?
Now, one little sort of macabre detail that I hadn't realized until I read your book was, I guess Timothy McVeigh was wearing a T-shirt when he bombed the federal building in Oklahoma City that was an anti-Lincoln shirt.
Yeah, they had a picture of Lincoln's face, and it said, "Sic Semper Tyrannis," which is what Booth yelled after shooting Lincoln. And then he bombed the Murrah building. And then the catalog company who was selling that shirt sold out of the shirt, you know.
All these people wanted the shirt that would celebrate, not only celebrate McVeigh, but celebrate Lincoln's death.
I think that, like, there's something very American about all of this. And the day McVeigh chose to do that was April 19th, which is Patriots Day, which is the commemoration of Lexington and Concord. And I think, like, people are always, myself included, and there's no real answer to this, trying to figure out, like, why we're such a violent country. You know, Lexington and Concord happens a whole year before the pretty words of the Declaration. Like, we're founded on violence, a violence we have holidays about, you know, that we celebrate. Like, we celebrate that war. We're proud of that war, the Revolutionary War. And when you celebrate violence, it always is going to, like, occasionally come back to haunt you.
Well, and what's sobering about the story is that, of course, most people mourn the assassination of Lincoln, celebrate Lincoln. But there is that contingent that still celebrates John Wilkes Booth, and there will probably always be people like that. I mean, sort of celebrating I guess, the darker side of the American character.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the people. Well, I guess there's a little bit of that in all of us.
Sarah Vowell talked with Steve Paulson. Her book is called Assassination Vacation.